Imagine meeting a man who spent thousands of dollars on a romantic relationship with a woman he'd never met, spoken to, or even confirmed existed. You might pity him as gullible or deluded. Now imagine discovering that this victim of deception knew, on some level, the relationship wasn't real, yet it saved him from alcoholism, gave him purpose, and pulled him from the brink of suicide. Would you still call him foolish? This paradox launched me into exploring one of humanity's most fascinating psychological mechanisms, beneficial self-deception. Useful delusions has been praised by figures from Malcolm Gladwell to Adam Grant as a transformative work that challenges our fundamental assumptions about truth and deception. The book has sparked conversations across disciplines from psychology to economics, forcing us to reconsider whether seeing reality clearly is always advantageous. In a world increasingly divided by competing versions of truth, understanding the psychological foundations of self-deception has never been more relevant. Our daily interactions overflow with what psychologists call emotional labor, the suppression of natural emotions in service of social harmony. From the Disney employee maintaining a cheerful demeanor despite difficult customers, to the flight attendant smiling through turbulence, service workers carry this burden constantly. But this dynamic extends far beyond professional settings into the fabric of everyday life. These cushions of hot air begin in kindergarten with lessons to say something nice or nothing at all, and continue through adulthood in countless interactions. Service industries deliberately conceal their transactional nature. Disney's magic bands silently transfer money while claiming to add magic to vacations. And restaurants discreetly present bills in leather folders to maintain the illusion of hospitality rather than commerce. Our conversations themselves are constructed on foundations of deception. We ask, "How are you?" without wanting honest answers. We compliment appearances we find unremarkable. We feign interest in topics that bore us. Sociologist Harvey Sachs documented how lying is often more prevalent than truth-telling in ordinary interactions. Without these deceptions, our conversations would be brutally honest and potentially destructive. Politicians particularly excel at audience tuning, tailoring messages to what listeners want to hear. The most successful ones eventually believe these tailored messages themselves, making their performances more convincing. We celebrate this as emotional intelligence while finding those who speak unfiltered truths cold or cruel. Research confirms that civility and hot air are essential for functional teams. Studies show rudeness impairs thinking, creativity, and helpfulness. As one newspaper editor wisely observed, "No one ever got fired for doing a bad job. People get fired for being assholes." These social lies aren't merely superficial niceties. They're the essential lubricant that allows human societies to function. While philosopher Immanuel Kant viewed truthfulness as the foundation of all duties, our actual behavior reveals a more nuanced relationship with honesty. Parents who rank honesty as their most cherished virtue still enthusiastically perpetuate the Santa Claus myth. These aren't simple social niceties, but deeper deceptions born from love and kindness. Parents strategically employ lies, praising mediocre drawings, inventing consequences to keep children safe, and telling stories like George Washington and the cherry tree to instill virtues. Across cultures, from American suburbs to Mayan communities, parents use similar tactics to protect and guide their children. We extend this compassionate deception to vulnerable adults, too. We might tell elderly parents their perfectly functional car needs repairs to keep them from driving dangerously, or create elaborate fictional environments for dementia patients. Coaches motivate underperforming teams with encouraging falsehoods, and managers soften difficult truths to maintain workplace morale. Our relationship with lying is nuanced. We despise deception that benefits someone at others' expense, but admire lies that help people achieve their potential. When those we love face terminal illness, divorce, or other hardships, we readily offer comforting falsehoods like "everything will be okay." Our willingness to deceive correlates directly with our loyalty and others' vulnerability. Dan Ariely, an expert on deception, discovered through personal experience that benevolent deception can be crucial to well-being. After suffering severe burns as a teenager, he benefited from doctors withholding the full brutality of his prognosis. When a nurse falsely told him a painful procedure would be simple and painless, he later realized this spared him weeks of dread. Studies consistently show optimists outlive pessimists and even realists when facing serious illness. One study found AIDS patients with realistic views died 9 months earlier than optimistic patients, while another showed pessimistic patients had 19% higher mortality rates across various conditions. Despite this evidence, we remain tethered to rationality and truth, even when deception might better serve compassion. In 1784, Benjamin Franklin led a scientific commission investigating Franz Anton Mesmer's celebrated healing device, the baquet. Through clever experiments, they proved patients responded to suggestion rather than Mesmer's claimed animal magnetism. One woman violently convulsed when merely told Mesmer's assistant was magnetizing her. He wasn't present. Another lost consciousness after being led blindfolded through a garden where he believed a tree had been magnetized. The commission concluded no such force existed, destroying Mesmer's reputation. Yet Franklin himself acknowledged that such delusion may, however, in some cases, be of use for people who might benefit from avoiding medications. The commissioners recognized Mesmer's patients were indeed healed, not through magnetism, but through what they called imagination, the power of the mind acting upon the body. In 1994, surgeon Bruce Mosley conducted a similar revelation at Houston Veterans Affairs Medical Center. For some patients with arthritic knees, he performed only sham surgery, making incisions but mimicking the actual procedure. 2 years later, patients who received actual arthroscopic surgery showed identical improvement as those who received placebo surgery. A larger follow-up study confirmed these findings, proving that one of the world's most common surgical procedures derived its benefits entirely from the placebo effect. Placebos have been part of medicine since its earliest days. Thomas Jefferson noted that one successful physician used more bread pills, drops of colored water, and powders of hickory ashes than all other medicines put together. Modern clinical trials reveal that even effective pharmaceuticals owe significant portions of their benefits to the placebo effect. The placebo effect isn't merely mind over matter. It's about the power of medical theater and ritual. When a physician appears, patients often begin feeling better immediately. The bond of trust between doctor and patient is one of the strongest predictors of positive outcomes in therapy. Modern hospitals, with sophisticated technology and white-coated physicians, enact our culture's version of healing rituals. Ted Kapchuk, director of Harvard's program in placebo studies, questions why we don't harness this power more deliberately. When Leonard Cobb's 1959 study showed a popular angina surgery worked no better than placebo surgery, the procedure was abandoned, despite having helped 75% of patients. This raises ethical dilemmas. Would prescribing treatments known to work only through placebo open the door to charlatanism? Does the placebo effect require deception to function? Our economic lives are built on shared stories and collective beliefs that transform ordinary objects into items of value. From bottled water to currency to pharmaceuticals, the stories we tell about products often matter more than their physical properties. A 2003 episode of Penn & Teller's show Bullshit revealed how easily people could be fooled into praising garden hose water served in fancy bottles with exotic names. But rather than merely exposing consumer gullibility, this experiment demonstrated how storytelling fundamentally changes our experiences. Just as the placebo effect works in medicine, the drama surrounding a product transforms our perception and enjoyment of it. Modern economies depend heavily on storytelling. Money itself is merely a shared story whose value rests entirely on collective belief, as demonstrated when governments suddenly declare certain currency notes worthless. Companies spend billions on advertising to create stories around their products. Apple's marketing doesn't just sell phones, but devices with uncanny magic. These narratives don't just influence purchasing decisions, they actually enhance our enjoyment of the products themselves. The Toyota Corolla and Geo Prism case illustrates this perfectly. Though built in the same factory with identical materials by the same workers, Corolla drivers reported fewer maintenance problems, greater satisfaction, and their cars depreciated more slowly, despite costing $2,000 more. This demonstrates how expectations fundamentally alter our experiences with products. Price dramatically affects our experience beyond mere perception. In Antonio Rangel's wine experiment, people not only rated identical wine higher when poured from an expensive bottle, but brain scans showed their pleasure centers actually activated more intensely. They genuinely experienced greater enjoyment. Similarly, Baba Shiv found exercisers who drank full-priced energy drinks performed better workouts than those drinking discounted versions of the same drink. In another study, people solved nearly twice as many word puzzles when they believed their performance-enhancing drink cost more. Brands represent powerful meaning systems that become extensions of consumer identity. Americus Reed describes how Apple created psychological distinction for the iPod despite it being functionally identical to other MP3 players. When Lance Armstrong's doping scandal broke, Reed felt he lost a part of himself and ceremonially discarded all his Livestrong gear, almost like a funeral. Research shows branded products actually enhance performance. Golfers sink balls in fewer strokes with Nike clubs, and test takers perform better with 3M earplugs versus identical generic versions. These effects reveal how stories embedded in products create real value, though we rarely acknowledge this complicit dance between deception and self-deception. Evolution has equipped our brains with bugs, distortions, and shortcuts that produce slanted pictures of reality. These aren't flaws, but features designed to enhance survival and reproduction. Natural selection isn't concerned with accurate perception, but with evolutionary fitness. Take love, seemingly the pinnacle of human experience, but fundamentally brain chemistry designed to ensure we protect our children, find mates, and reproduce. We're like self-replicating robots programmed with emotions that short-circuit rationality when necessary for species survival. These self-deceptions shape our most intense relationships between parents and children, lovers, even pet owners and their animals. Andre Gonchiar spent $30,000 on a kidney transplant for his aging cat, Oki, explaining, "Look at their child or their mother and ask themselves the same question." We often judge others through naive realism, assuming our view of reality is correct while others must be biased or uninformed. Like George Carlin's observation that drivers slower than us are idiots and those faster are maniacs, this perspective blinds us to the validity of different experiences. Joseph Jesse Enriquez's story illustrates this powerfully. Born in 1953 in dusty Dalhart, Texas, Joseph was painfully shy, overweight, and developed terrible acne. Bullied and isolated, he found escape in comic books about outsiders. After his mother died and father fell ill, Joseph felt utterly alone. That's when the first letter arrived, seemingly handwritten from a woman at a woodland retreat in Illinois, beginning a correspondence that would change his life. Soon, Joseph was corresponding with multiple women from this community led by Mother Maria. He was particularly drawn to Pamela St. Charles, Mother Maria's first assistant, a beautiful brunette who had escaped poverty and an abusive marriage. Their correspondence deepened as Pamela showed remarkable insight into Joseph's personality and shared personal struggles. Though he sent her several $1,000s in love offerings over time, Joseph treasured their connection, keeping her photo framed on his dresser. Studies reveal that healthy individuals often have delusions of control, while depressed people see reality more clearly. Psychologists Alloy and Abramson titled their groundbreaking paper, "Sadder but Wiser," finding that as depressed people respond to treatment, they actually become more prone to self-deception. Cognitive therapies don't necessarily instill realism, but rather optimism, putting rose-tinted glasses on patients to better equip them for life's difficulties. Psychologist Shelley Taylor coined the term positive illusions for these beneficial self-deceptions. While overconfidence can sometimes be dangerous, positive illusions help people perform better and stay happier. People who are delusionally optimistic generally outlive those with more realistic attitudes. We are most easily deceived by those with whom we formed emotional attachments, particularly romantic partners. Yet studies show that delusional thinking and positive illusions shape most healthy relationships too. Research consistently demonstrates that the more we deceive ourselves about our lovers, seeing them as kinder, more generous, and more beautiful than objective analysis would justify, the happier our relationships become. Philosopher Alain de Botton argues that we all marry the wrong person, not as a case for divorce, but as recognition that we must reject the founding romantic idea that a perfect being exists who can satisfy our every yearning. In reality, every human will disappoint us, and we them. Psychological research shows that in healthy relationships, people see partners through rose-tinted glasses. A Canadian study found that subjects routinely judged partners better than partners evaluated themselves, particularly exaggerating qualities they personally valued most. Crucially, couples with the most inflated views, the greatest degree of self-deception, were the happiest. As Benjamin Franklin advised, keep your eyes wide open before marriage and half shut afterward. Cognitive distortions also help maintain fidelity. Studies show people in love more quickly denigrate potential alternatives to their current partner. When asked to think about their love interests, subjects were better able to black out images of attractive alternatives. They were repulsed, demonstrating how love creates protective perceptual biases. Neurologists have discovered that love literally impairs our critical thinking abilities. When we're in love, brain changes make us blind to our loved one's flaws, the same changes triggered by maternal love, which can be even more unreasonable. We also deceive ourselves about our own appearance. In experiments where subjects were shown altered photographs of themselves, most immodestly chose pictures that made them look more attractive. People with higher self-esteem overrated their looks more than those with low self-esteem, suggesting superior psychological functioning often correlates with delusional thinking. We don't just see what we want to see figuratively, we literally perceive reality differently based on our desires. Harvard professor Jerome Bruner demonstrated this in 1947 when he asked children from wealthy and poor backgrounds to estimate coin sizes. All children perceived coins as larger than actual size, but poor children saw them as even bigger, their perception magnified by need. Psychologists Emily Balchettis and David Dunning coined the term wishful seeing after showing that desire directly influences visual perception. In one experiment, subjects shown an ambiguous figure that could be read as either 13 or B interpreted it based on which reading would earn them orange juice instead of a foul-smelling vegetable smoothie. These perceptual distortions aren't random errors, but systematic biases designed to lead us toward predetermined goals. The self-deceiving brain shapes our personal lives in countless ways, influencing our search for meaning, our interactions with brands, and our interpersonal communications. But its greatest power lies in how it bends us to the call of our communities and tribes. Our brains are wired not just for individual survival, but for group cohesion. Natural selection has endowed us with algorithms that sometimes prioritize tribal welfare over personal self-interest. While we have powerful drives for self-preservation, special subroutines exist that can make us willing to sacrifice for our group. From an evolutionary perspective, this makes sense. Our genes don't live only inside us, but inside our fellow tribespeople as well. In the Congolese village of Bulambika, facing brutal raids from Hutu militants, an elder's dream led to the creation of a bulletproofing ritual involving special powders placed in a gri-gri charm. Despite scientific impossibility, this ritual transformed the village's response to attacks. Rather than fleeing, young men stood their ground, fought back, and eventually deterred further raids. While villagers died in these confrontations, these deaths were attributed to errors in performing the ritual rather than the ritual's ineffectiveness. Economists Nathan Nunn and Raul Sanchez de la Sierra found that belief in the ritual was the deciding factor in Bulambika's survival. Though scientifically false, the belief tipped the cost-benefit equation toward resistance instead of flight, ultimately saving the village from extinction. Bulletproofing rituals have emerged repeatedly across history and cultures. The ghost dance movement among Native Americans included ghost shirts believed to make wearers invulnerable to bullets, ending tragically at Wounded Knee in 1890. Similarly, in China, the boxer's armor of the Golden Bell ritual failed to protect them against Western powers. Yet these failures had complex legacies. The Boxer Rebellion marked the beginning of China's transformation from a nation facing dismemberment to a world power. For Native Americans, the ghost dance offered unity in desperate times, with Wounded Knee becoming a rallying symbol for cultural identity. Rituals have been part of human experience for at least 70,000 years. While often associated with religion, rituals permeate secular life too, from handshakes to sports celebrations to wedding ceremonies. What makes rituals remarkable is their apparent pointlessness. They serve no obvious practical purpose. Yet people worldwide, even the poorest, prioritize spending on weddings, funerals, and religious festivals. The costliness of rituals isn't incidental, but essential to their psychological utility. They ward off anxiety, connect us to our cultural heritage, and bind us to our groups. The significant demands rituals place on participants serve crucial social and psychological functions, especially in the face of threats and uncertainty. The Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Arlington National Cemetery features a solemn ritual called Walking the Mat, where sentries march 21 steps, pause for 21 seconds, and repeat this pattern continuously. This understated monument, with its simple inscription, "Here rests in honored glory an American soldier known but to God," has become America's most sacred symbol on its most hallowed ground. Arlington Cemetery itself embodies America's complex history, built on land once owned by George Washington's adopted son, a slave owner who used over 60 enslaved people to construct what now serves as a memorial to Robert E. Lee. This physical space represents the complicated truths beneath national myths. Most Americans feel deep patriotic connection to their country, believing it represents distinctive ideals like freedom, liberty, and equality. Yet these deeply held national beliefs are largely mythological constructions built upon more complicated historical truths. America's founding stories, being a nation of immigrants or the land of the free, obscure uncomfortable realities. The United States was a slave-owning country far longer than it has been one where slavery was abolished. Nations themselves are fundamentally imagined communities, social constructions without objective criteria defining them. They exist primarily because we collectively believe they exist, held together by shared stories about heroes and histories while suppressing narratives of failure or cruelty. National myths, despite being semi-truths or outright lies, serve extraordinarily useful functions. Once millions believe these collective fictions, they become real in their consequences. These shared delusions give us cohesion to accomplish great achievements, from defeating fascism in World War II to building the Hoover Dam or sending humans to the moon. Without subscribing to the story of America, we would lack the shared identity needed for commerce, currency, taxation, or maintaining volunteer armies. To bridge the gap between a nation's functional benefits and the personal sacrifices required to sustain it, we must harness powerful human drives towards serving something greater than ourselves. In 2016, a professional-looking video circulated featuring Ahmad Sami Kader, a handsome young doctor speaking perfect English while treating patients. The video concluded with Kader calmly urging fellow Muslims in Britain to join him in a great cause, revealing itself as an ISIS recruitment pitch targeting Western medical professionals. Anthropologist Scott Atran's research revealed that 80% of French ISIS recruits came from non-religious families, with most becoming born again only after committing to the group. ISIS expertly exploited feelings of marginalization through personalized storytelling, connecting individual frustrations to larger oppressive forces. This propaganda isn't unique. It resembles the myth-making that propelled revolutions throughout history, harnessing the power of sacred causes that give followers meaning beyond themselves. The Valley of the Kings sits beneath a pyramid-shaped peak called the Horn, symbolically positioned between the life-giving Nile Delta to the east and the vast, lifeless Sahara to the west, a fitting border between life and death for Egypt's pharaohs. The ancient Egyptians were famously religious, particularly in their obsession with the afterlife, which spawned an enormous industry of magical spells, ritual gear, and funeral rites. Religious beliefs exist in every culture and society, prompting thinkers to question why. While Marx called religion the opium of the people, and Freud termed it a universal obsessional neurosis, these descriptions don't explain religion's pervasive influence across millennia. Terror management theory offers a functional explanation. Humans uniquely understand their mortality, producing incapacitating fear that requires mental defenses. Building on Ernst Becker's The Denial of Death, psychologist Sheldon Solomon argues that humans can't function while constantly aware they're breathing pieces of defecating meat. Our minds create convenient fictions to manage existential terror. Over 500 experimental studies support this theory, showing that death reminders, mortality salience, make people cling more strongly to cultural values, favor in-group members, and punish norm violators more harshly. Philosophers call our relationship with death the mortality paradox. We know we'll die, but can't truly imagine non-existence. Stephen Cave identifies four immortality narratives humans have created to resolve this paradox. The longevity story, seeking eternal life through elixirs or magic. Resurrection, believing the body will be revived after death. Soul survival, believing our essence continues after bodily death. And legacy, living on through our deeds, children, or cultural contributions. As human societies expanded beyond small hunter-gatherer bands, they encountered new problems. In small groups, everyone knew each other, making norm enforcement simple. But larger societies brought interactions with strangers and wealth accumulation possibilities that threatened group cohesion. Psychologist Azim Sharif argues that religion emerged as a social innovation addressing these challenges. Where interpersonal ties once ensured cooperation, religion stepped in with the threat of divine punishment. Sharif's research shows that belief in angry, vengeful deities effectively prevents cheating and promotes ethical behavior. Religious rituals, especially costly ones, serve as signals of authentic belief. Without such costs, people could claim religious membership for its benefits without true commitment, free riding. Like a peacock's impractical but beautiful tail signals fitness to peahens, painful religious rituals signal genuine devotion to fellow believers. As societies developed effective governance structures, punitive gods became less necessary for enforcing norms. This explains why many religions have shifted from angry gods to loving, forgiving ones. Countries with high-functioning states and social services, like Scandinavia, show the lowest religious belief levels worldwide. Meanwhile, religion flourishes in regions marked by poverty, inequality, and social conflict. Research suggests religious adolescents enjoy better mental health than their non-religious peers. Religion's benefits extend beyond mental health. Religious people live on average 5 years longer than non-religious individuals. Regular religious service attendees have stronger social networks, more friends, and volunteer more frequently. While acknowledging the costs of religious dogma, we must consider uncomfortable questions. What if false beliefs help people live longer and connect better with families? What if myths help communities thrive? What if self-deceptions prompt people to sacrifice for others? The Covington High School incident exemplifies how quickly we form tribal judgments with limited information. Julie Zimmerman initially condemned the Catholic schoolboys based on a brief video showing an apparent confrontation with a Native American elder. When longer videos revealed a more complex situation, she publicly reconsidered her position, only to find herself ostracized by fellow liberals while embraced by conservatives. This demonstrates how truth-seeking can feel like tribal betrayal. UCLA psychologist Jennifer Whitson's research explains this phenomenon. People experiencing lack of control engage in false pattern recognition and conspiracy theories. The remedy isn't logical argument, but addressing underlying emotional needs. This paradox reveals that to achieve rational goals, we must work with the self-deceiving brain. Rather than merely attacking false beliefs with facts, we should compassionately ask what psychological benefits these beliefs provide and how to address those needs. Perhaps certain myths, like religious faith, might even help address collective challenges like climate change by motivating people to act beyond self-interest. At our core lies a fundamental dilemma. We need hope to function, but reality offers endless reasons for despair. When we consider our cosmic insignificance, humans occupying merely an eighth of an inch on a 100-yard timeline of Earth's life, the truth about our trivial existence can be terrifying. How do we reconcile our need for meaning with the cold facts of our impermanence? Understanding our cosmic insignificance produces both wonder and terror. Our lives are objectively trivial and easily forgotten, a truth that's incompatible with survival. This is why cultures worldwide create beliefs giving life purpose and meaning. While these beliefs are often illogical, they serve a crucial function. Life doesn't care about truth, it cares about what works.